I'm Vadim again, and despite I'm a Sysmacom employee doing freelancing, this is a hobby project which is not really related to Sysmacom in any way. So I was doing it in my spare time since 2021, I guess. And yeah, so this is my phone collection, and I really loved the old, good old Sony Ericsson phones, and not only phones but also modems. And what this talk is going to be about, it's, yeah, of course, not about this collection, but about, yeah, this undocumented vendor-specific protocol called debug MOOCs, which can be found in all of them, and, yeah, in some modems, which we also have here, and some PCI Express or USB ones. Yeah, the protocol is quite similar to the Qualcomm's QMI interface, so you can use it to get some debugging information from, yeah, from the normal firmware, not development one. And yeah, so in this talk I will explain the protocol, share the knowledge about the protocol analysis, about the tooling I use during the analysis. And yeah, yes, back in the days, I owned two Sony Ericsson phones, and yeah, until 2019, I just put my smartphone aside and lived with an old dumb phone like this one for 3 years or so, and I was happy. And yeah, so why I started this? Because I love weird protocols. That's why I'm doing GSM, by the way. And I was curious to understand how TEMS investigation works. And for those who don't know, this is a special software for the field engineers in mobile networks to basically check the coverage, investigate various problems while investigation. And yeah, I was always interested to understand how it looks like on the wire. And maybe a few words about the usability. Ericsson stopped development of the mobile stack, and you don't have LTE in Ericsson modems anymore. We never had it there. And yeah, so it's unlikely it will be usable to any one of you. It's mostly archaeological interest and just sharing knowledge, but might be useful for debugging Osmocom stack sometimes. And that helped me a lot already. So here's the concept. Like, you have the embedded device, like a phone or a modem on the left, and on the right your computer. And they are connected somehow, be it USB, Bluetooth, or infrared. And on the embedded device, you have the server, debug MOOC server. And on the client, you have the client, obviously. And on top of that, you have a concept of data providers and client applications. So a data provider is basically some part of the firmware, like, I don't know, user interface or your modem stack or something like that. It's up to the developer, and different firmwares, different phones have different, like, let's say, sets of data provider available. And yeah, it's exposed on most Sony Ericsson phones except A0 platform, which is the old ones, maybe T110 or something like that. T610, yeah, that's the old one, and you won't find it there. But on all modems, like, yeah, it's also available pretty much everywhere, I would say. Yeah, and you can basically, using this protocol, you can establish one-to-one connections between the client applications. It's like you're debugging applications, something to read logs, or basically Wireshark, maybe, and the various data providers in the target. And there already exists software for that that's able to speak debug MOOCs protocol. And that's mostly from Ericsson, of course. Yeah. I managed to obtain debug MOOCs logger, the server. Don't be confused. It's not the target implementation. It's something that, whatever, I will explain later. So there's EMBLA logger. So it's basically, yeah, also some debugging tool for the users. TEMS investigation, you know, maybe some of you used it already. And there is also TSCOM, TSPROBE, TSTOOL, so something very magic mentioned in very few places, so I wasn't able to find it. And of course, all of them are black box binaries for Windows, so yeah, you have no idea how they work.
Ancient versions of Windows.
Yeah, kind of, but some of them, as you can see, can work on Windows 7, so that's already a good progress. No, 95. Yeah, and for this one, yes. I think it should be also working on Windows 10. This is how it looks like, and here is like what you get when you connect to the target. You have a list of data providers, basically, where you can double-click and interact with them in some way. But yeah, it's not interesting at all. It's not fancy. We've got to write our own tools for that, right? So this is how it looks like when you already like started a connection to some data providers. And this is TEMS investigation. That's not my photo, but this is how it looks like when you have all those weird fancy interfaces showing the signal level, whereas packets, bits, and so on, configuration. Yeah, so I wanted to be able to do that myself and understand how the software gets this information out of the phone. So I managed to find this debug MUX logger binary, and I started it in a QEMU Windows XP guest. And first I tried using this free device monitoring studio, which is also a Windows app, and you can even write scripts for it, but yeah, it wasn't so convenient, so I actually used a feature of QEMU to basically proxy the serial port connection from the host machine to the guest. And you can do that, and thanks to Soulcat, you can also basically see what's happening, basically get dumps of the protocol. And this is what it looks like. You see some BB, and this pattern appears in several places already. Yeah. So. What do you do when you see something like this? Of course, you ask in Twitter, as the Twitter power. And yeah, so there is this 4242, which looks like HDLC, and many people already assume that it might be HDLC or some form of it. But no, not really. And also, Sec, your nickname also matches 4242. As he said, any protocol using 42 is nice. Yeah, so that's how the frame looks like in reality. So after doing, basically looking at the captures, I figured out that you have this marker in the beginning. It's not like stop, like not start and not stop. It's just a marker, and I think they just used a random value, which is 4242. You have length of the whole frame, which basically follows the length field, some counters, message type, data, and the message correctness sequence, FCS, frame check sequence, of course. And yeah, thanks to Sec for finding the right parameters. That was actually CRC 16 with those parameters, which we already implemented. And you have those messages in the protocol. So the very first one that you will see is the inquiry. I don't know their names, but in Ericsson, they seem to use message types which have ASCII letter assigned to it, and it's even like more or less sequential. And you have inquiry, that's how we call it, so that's the way to request information about the target, like IMEI and model. You have the target info, basically a response for that, ping pong for connection testing, like nothing special. And you have TP unknowns, so that's how the target, the phone or the modem, tells the host side developer that there is a subsystem which you can establish connection to and send data or receive data. Yeah, so of course there is also connection establishment, request and response, and termination, basically request and response. And you have connection data, so that's how you basically interact with data providers. It's bidirectional. And you have a simple form of flow control, which I will talk about later and acknowledge. So that's the protocol, very simple. And actually establishing this debug MUX mode is done via the modem using a special AT command. I'm not sure if you can see it here. I'll make it a bit larger. Yeah, so basically the client with developer machine sending this magic AT command, and it's pretty much like establishing a data GPRS call over a modem. You also get this connect message, and yes, you are in debug MUX mode. And the problem right now is that we don't know how to escape this mode, right? You can, like with normal modem connections, you can quickly type plus three times, and that will get you back to the command interpreter. It doesn't work here. I tried sending break, and also didn't help. So, but this proprietary software is somehow able to do this, so we need to analyze the system calls maybe better to understand. And yeah, alternative you have here is crush debug Mux server. So basically send some payload that it wouldn't like, it crushes and it returns you back to the TcoWandler interpreter. Or you can just unplug your USB and plug it back. So that's also a solution. Yeah, so that's how the beginning of the conversation looks like. Usually the target, the developer machine inquiries the target, you get model, IMEI, and data providers available there. And yeah, so this is how like link testing looks like on the figure four. And ping is, yes, ping is unidirectional. I never seen ping so far from the target, so I assume it is unidirectional. And there's a funny bug, like the ping message can contain some arbitrary payload up to, yes, 255 bytes. And if you say that it contains 255, but send a short message, you can dump the memory out of the target, like basically raw bytes. Yeah, so hope it's visible. Yeah, that's how the connection establishment also looks like. So you get unknowns, and in the announcement, you know, so-called DP reference. So that's every data provider has its own unique data provider reference, and it's not persistent. It's pseudo-random across. It doesn't like remain constant across reboots. And once you have connection established, you get also connection reference, which you will use in your data messages to interact. And because you can have multiple connections in parallel, so that's how you distinguish between them. And one limitation is that there can be only one connection with the data provider. So flow control. Early connection flow. Yes, so that's actually flow control, yes. So you have a very simple form of flow control, which is unidirectional. Only the target can basically tell you how many data blocks it is able to process, and only then the client is allowed to send something. Otherwise, like this is probably because of the limitations of the embedded target to allow to overloading the CPU and so on. And it works very simple. Like you establish connection and you have zero credits. And when you get flow control, you basically get some credits and you can send messages. And whenever you send a message, you decrement this credit, and that's it. That's a very simple form of it. You have counters in every debug MUX frame. Yeah, and acknowledgement message is very special, but that's how you learn that something was lost. For instance, if you look at the figure eight, so the target, the server, is sending something, like three packets in a row, and one of them gets lost. So that's the one in the middle. And the client detects that the packet was lost, and that's how it uses the counters, Ericsson TX counters. So it basically acknowledges the last sequentially received packet. And yeah, nothing really special, but yeah, this is how like link recovery works. Yeah, except that the acknowledgement is a bit special, like it always has this TX counter set to a specific hard-coded value F1. And of course, unlike in GPRS, acknowledgements don't need to be acknowledged. Yeah, so here is the open source implementation of the client application. And it used to be on GitHub, but then it's not there anymore. I spare you the details, but now it's on Gitia, on the Osmocom servers. And it's a Python project with few dependencies, but looking at the list of dependencies, you can already guess that it was heavily inspired by PySim application. You also have the CMD2 and even PyShark, yeah. And you have two programs, two binaries in there, also shell, like in PySim shell, and that can be used to activate debug MUX, identify target, establish connections, and do various stuff. And dump is to analyze, basically, packet captures. Basically, very useful for me, personally. And yeah, you have various formats, and this PyShark is optional. It's only used for this PTCAP, where you can take a pickup made with like sniffing a Bluetooth connection, and then you can get like debug MUX. Installing seems to be easy, but yeah, on modern distributions, you get something like this when you try to install it. So yeah, the right way for doing this would be using either virtual environment or packages, which is, yeah, thanks. There's already ready-made packages by Rooks, and I also created package build for Arch. And this is how it looks like when you start it. So you basically specify the serial port, you do connect, that basically activates debug moves mode, and then you inquire the target. So yeah, in this case, it's Sony Ericsson C510 with the IMEI I don't care about. And you have a list of data providers, each with its data provider reference unique for this session. And yeah, you can do like establish connection to one of them or like several of them. And yeah, just kit control C that aborts connection. We will talk about like data provider types a bit later, but you can already see like there is ACC and APP. So usually they have a model of application processor and access processor. So access is the most interesting one because that's the baseband basically. And yeah, with the dump management, you have several formats. You can do various stuff like this. So this is how it looks like. And that was before I wrote Wireshark dissector for this weird protocol, which is unlikely to be merged. So yeah, that still remains the primary toolkit. And yeah, I saw that Eric implemented Wireshark dissector for SimTrace in Lua, and I was like, wow, that's a nice chance to learn this weird new language for me. And I quickly implemented it. And this is how it looks like in T-Shark, whatever your tool of choice. And this is in details, basically. So yeah, I think that's connection establishment, right? You get the host is requesting connection. It is established with this connection reference. And then below you have the flow control telling you that you can send two blocks. And you have a data block limit, which should be in the establishment now. Okay, it's missing here, but there is also another parameter which tells you how long is a single block can be. That's basically it. It's a bit about the module hierarchy. So yeah, you have the protocol definition, obviously, and I used to do a lot of development based on pkrate, which is a nice project which already contains a lot of definitions for 3GPP protocol and so on. But it's not that easy to get it installed on a regular distribution. So I looked at SimTrace again and found that Python Construct is quite a nice library, and it's available in many distributions. So yeah, that's why I used it. Yeah, so you have a peer, which is an abstract implementation of like one of the sites. You have the client implementation, that's the host site, and no server implementation. I'm not interested in doing the server yet. You have the input outputs, various dump formats, and connection handlers. That's the most interesting. So apart from the base class, you have the terminal, which is like inside the interactive shell that you can establish connection and basically interact with one of data providers. We are using this terminal. It's basically reading from standard input and writing to standard output. There is a file logger that's mostly for the read-only data providers where you receive lots of traffic. You can save it to file directly. UDP proxy also, like as the name suggests, nothing special you are sending. And the special part about it is that it does preserve packet boundaries, which might be important for some data providers. And walk, I will talk about this a bit later. So this is the kinds of data providers that you will, like some of them you will usually see, and depending on how modern is the modem or like the phone, you'll see more or less of them. And yeah, so the easiest ones are like print server channels. So that's receive only data providers where you just basically get a print, like a D message, like the kernel log. You just get everything, you cannot filter. Yeah, that's just a stream of text. You also have interactive debug, which are a lot more interesting because I will talk about them later, but you can interact with them using ASCII commands. And yeah, you have also some print server for the UI. You have AT commands. So maybe that's the way. You don't need to exit debug MOOCs mode. You just enter and establish another connection and you can, send AT commands. And you can establish as many as you want, because once you establish connection, Yes, go on, Harold.
Have you ever tried to send the magic 18 command to enter this mode through the 18 command?
Yes, of course. Yes, I did. It doesn't work, unfortunately. Yeah. And maybe something that I forgot to mention, you can only have one, like when you connect a phone to your computer, you get like two or three serial ports, but you can have only one debug MOOC session on one of them. If you try it on another, you get an, like no carrier, typical one. So yeah, we at least on top is the list of data providers that we more or less understand the purpose, and for on the bottom, SDK server, like, okay, apparently something related to the SDK, OSE gateway, so that's kind of might be related to something to the operating system that those fancy phones are using. It's yeah, I don't remember exactly the name, but yeah, it's a host interface file transfer. Looks like OBEX, the old way to transfer files over Bluetooth, for instance. And this turning torso, so it's a skyscraper in Sweden. I have no idea what it's doing here, but yeah, maybe one of the developers just put it there. It can be seen on a few versions. And TVP is the most interesting one. It's the only binary protocol, like from the table above. And yeah, it's another rabbit hole that deserves its own talk. But yeah, anyways, so. Yeah, it's a print server available on nearly all target that we saw so far. And the same can be achieved like if you just take a cable and make a special one, you basically put 5 volts on one of the magic pins and you get the same output, like USB pins become the UART pins and you can like receive the same amount, the same data, but everything in one stream. So you cannot really choose between access and basement processor or application processor. Yeah, so that's logging. And that's how it looks like, for instance, for one of the modems, which is not here. But yeah, it's basically the startup log of the operating system that this modem runs. Yeah, it's something related to the memory mapping and so on. And that's how the basement processor starts. You have some primitives, some values assigned to them. It's not that interesting yet. But this is how location updating looks like, for instance, if I make it a bit, yeah, so that it fits the screen. Even more. And more. Okay, I hope it's still recognizable. Yeah, it's like in D message, like a sequential number. I haven't figured it out yet, but yeah, could be timestamp, yes, but I'm not sure which unit it is. So, location updating, it's like, first you have some data indication, and that's something received from the network, and like as the logging tells you, that's the authentication request. And you see some magic happening between the SIM card and the phone, like basically to do the authentication with the SIM card. And yeah, we are basically responding to that. I'm not sure what this error frame is about, but you can see some like system information type six in hex dump. Then you get some more, and you see you are receiving like what's the name of that? The message that tells the current time, like in GS.
Yes.
Yeah, and you can see that like the firmware spawns like a UE dialog asking whether you want to use the time provided by the network or not. And in the end, you see like location updating accept and the new TMSI. So it's quite verbose, but might be useful to investigate some problems. And that's how like monitoring of the neighbors looks like. So yeah, nothing special. And yeah, that's something that that PAL might like, because that's the TBF logging of GPRS session. Yeah, so I'm not going to go into details, but might be also useful for debugging Osmo PCU someday. Yeah, so interactive debug, that's how it looks like when you establish a connection with one of them. It can be found like on many modems, like this one, for some reason with the normal consumer firmware. But for the phones, you actually have to flash special development firmware, which is not easy to get. And yeah, you need special hardware sometimes to like basically bypass the bootloader protections. And yes, you may have several like options, several variants of this interactive debug. And it's basically a virtual file system, which is quite similar to QMI. You can navigate through it. You have directories. You have commands, which like files, but they do something. You have variables also. So you have, basically typical, more or less typical commands for navigating, for R and W for writing and reading. Yeah, there is tab completion, but it doesn't work yet. So we might need to implement Telnet for that. And yes, there is a special connection handler called Walker, which can be used to generate like a listing, like full hierarchy of this interactive debug connection. And like, yes, this is what it looks like in case of one of the modems. I didn't put it down. Yeah, so you see, for instance, this NTCSD, that means non-transparent CSD, and you can play with this RLP parameters in the firmware, for instance, like enable debugging and, I don't know, send arbitrary payloads from there. And just like that, you also have, some parameters which specific to debug MOOCs itself, which is, not surprising, some IT command stuff. You can register, with IT commands, you can register some process, like basically bind it to a specific IT command. And that's for instance, what the, directory with, I think that has something to do with UMTS, RRC part of it, so you can toggle various stuff, enable prints and so on. And that's all, and this is non-transparent CSD. Of course, you can hang up the call, and whatever. So there is the last one, the last kind of data provider, which can also be found in many, many of those, but we still don't really know how to, we don't have software which is speaking it, except TEMS investigation, which is proprietary and you actually need to look inside. And it's much, much more powerful than like print server or even much powerful than interactive debug. And that, as I said, it deserves its own talk. I'm not going to go into details, but all I can say that I'm working on this. And this is basically how it looks like. You have the same data model, but on top of debug MOOCs, you have. It's actually a very interesting way to like implement debugging of your product. You basically put some kind of test points, like on PCB, in the firmware, and in that specific test point, you can either get some value or like set something. I don't know. Or you can like for getting data, for instance, when you get SMS. You can, at specific point, at specific layer, you can get the payload out of it dynamically without having to, hack the firmware or anything like that. And you can execute code dynamically. So, like, when the firmware reaches a specific point, you basically inject something. And, that's also nice for debugging. And so far, we know that, there are subsystems, like you have those test points or probes, as somewhere you can find they call it, and you have subsystems which kind of group those test points, and one of them is TEMS, and the other is POC. I guess that's TEMS Pocket, so that's the firmware for some Sony Ericsson phones. And we did some attempts to analyze the protocol already, and you can find, in case you're interested, you can find a pickup containing the full dump. And this is the command that you can use to basically decode it and see what's inside. And as far as I know, like for all generation of Sony Ericsson phones, there is a very simple authentication happening. So I was running TEMS investigation several times and I was capturing dumps and then basically comparing them one to each other. And so you see like the first message get sent is like authentication request for this specific subsystem. Like you cannot really like enable any test points attached to them before before doing authentication. So that's the requirement. And here you see that the target responds with a challenge, and you are supposed to sign that challenge. You are supposed to send a response. And in the end, that's the old part. We already can do this a bit, actually. Yeah, so that's basically brings us to the end of this presentation. So we have some things to do, but in general, I would say debug MOOCs is more or less complete, and all the focus is now on TBP protocol. We also might be interesting to play with the other data providers, which we don't understand the purpose yet. Maybe get access to the hidden file system. And yeah, finally, we would like to have GSM tap traces because yeah, that's the final goal maybe. Yeah, and I would like to say thanks to Harald for hosting the project, to Rooks for helping with investigation, collecting information, organizing it, and so on. And as I said, to SEC for finding the CRC parameters. Thank you. Oh.
So it was not clear to me. Did you submit the watershed dissector, the Lua one, or just in some public repository? Or
no, I did not submit it because I doubt it's useful in general. So I keep it as a part of the repository, which yes, you can. I will leave the reference in here. Yes, so you can go there and you will find it. You just copy to like your local home user folder and you get dissector working, so that's it. Yeah, I really doubt, I didn't want to implement it in C because, well, it doesn't deserve this effort, and Lua was also a nice way to learn something new.
Are you planning to try some modern stuff from Ericsson, like the Nobat or U85500 or such? Because it just came to my mind that Ericsson actually developed some of the LTE modems, but they did not. Their adoption was not so big. And I still remember that I have used some Ericsson modem also on one of my modern BlackBerry smartphone. Although I don't have it anymore because. And I just checked for eBay whether a smartphone with the Ericsson chipset is still available, and luckily it still is. And well, if you are interested, then you can also check for some Ericsson's Novator platform, which I hope shares this debug mux interface, and this will be also interesting if you are interested.
I would be definitely interested to look, and so yeah, it's basically I'm always happy to look at some like modems provided by Rooks. I'm collecting basically those interactive listings. And yeah, I think I heard about some Ericsson's modem that can do LTE, but if I'm correct, I looked closer, they actually sourced it from Nokia or somebody and just put a sticker that it's Toro Nova or something like that. I don't remember the name, but if you can give me the references, I would be really happy. Thanks. Yeah?
As for exiting the debug mux mode, did you try setting the modem status lines or changing the baud rate and so on?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, exactly. I tried that. I tried sending break. But yeah, I just need to analyze what this Windows app does because there must be a way.
Yeah,
sure. It's easy in case of Bluetooth, for instance. Like you just terminate connection and you're done. And next time you establish it, it works. But with USB, you actually have to replug it. And it's not convenient with those modems. That basically shuts down the whole modem and you have to boot it again.
Yeah, okay.
You could try just to send a USB reset, something like that, right?
That is an option.
So the power is remaining, but just on a logical USB level, you try to reset it.
Thanks for the idea. I'll consider that.
How do you do that?
Low-level USB stuff.
Well, you can do it using libUSB, I think.
There's no command tool or whatever.
There might be. Or you can do it in SysFS or something. I'm not sure. But I mean, I would just use libUSB, I guess.
All right. No more questions. Thanks for your attention and thanks. Yeah.